The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 544. Hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. Well, this episode is a second installment of the State of Pro Wrestling, The Territories. That's right, a few months ago, Gerald Glassford and I took four different territories and kind of dissected them. Basically, you know, why did we like them? Who were some of the stars that we enjoyed watching? What were some of the hot feuds that we enjoyed? And it went over so well that we're going to do a second episode, and that's what you're going to hear on this edition of the PVD Cast. Now, I know that some people might be out there, especially fans that have been avid fans of the PVD Cast for a while. You might be saying, you seem to have Gerald on all the time recently. Well, I'm going to be 100% honest. It's been tough getting guests. I've had a lot of individuals that originally reach out to me and say, I'd love to be part of the show. And then I follow up and crickets. So Gerald is always willing to help me out with episodes. And we do these evergreen episodes anyways for the State of Pro Wrestling. So we just share them and we just launch them through our various different outlets. And so that's what this is going to be. This is going to be another one of those State of Pro Wrestling, dealing with, of course, the topic of territories. And I kind of have buried the lead. I didn't tell you as to what four territories we're going to discuss. The first one is going to be Portland Wrestling, aka Pacific Northwest Wrestling. We're going to talk about the UWF, the Bill Watts version. We're going to talk about the UWF, Herb Abrams, and his version. And we're also going to talk about the Florida territory as well. So there you go. You have on tap what we're going to be talking about. And so with that, before I throw it to a quick break, I want to thank the newest sponsors of the PVD Cast, Courtney 614 Deals. Courtney has a lot of deals with all different types of items. I mean, health and beauty, clothing, home decor, glassware. She even just got in a shipment of hockey stuff. So if you need some hockey skates, you could definitely see Courtney and get yourself a heck of a deal. But anyways, she could be found on all those reselling sites like eBay, Whatnot, Poshmark, Marketplace, and others. Simply search her IG to find the deals that you want or need. And you can do that by, of course, going to Courtney 614 Deals. And if you make a purchase, please let Courtney know that you heard about her endeavors through the PVD Cast. All right, that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear Gerald Glassford and I talk about the territories.
Ding, ding, ding. And we're back with a special State of Pro Wrestling. Truly appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much for doing so. My name is Gerald Glassford. I cannot thank you enough for being a part of what we're doing here today. Please like and subscribe. Make sure you give us that five-star review wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you go ahead and hit up my friend, my tag team partner extraordinaire. Indeed, he weighs in at, I don't know, A jacked up 350 pounds of all muscle. He comes in there, 0% body fat. There you go. Indeed, he's just been taking supplements. That's all. He's just been taking vitamins. he's been saying his prayers, doing his training, taking his vitamins. It is a good man indeed. You got to go ahead and check him out today on the PVD Cast and PVDcast.com. And of course, Matt Talk, which is, as I always have to give a preface to, not wrestling related. It is Matlock related. It is, of course, John Orlando. What's going on, my friend?
Oh, not much. Just excited to do another special edition of the State of Pro Wrestling. And, you know, I gotta thank you for always being a good sport about jumping on here and doing an episode. Cause sometimes I'm gonna break a little kayfabe here for us. Sometimes these decisions are made at the last minute where can we record tonight? So I do appreciate it very, very much. And, again, I'm looking forward to it because the first time that we did this was a lot of fun. And I think this is going to be a lot of fun as well, especially with the topic at hand.
Our specials seem to be kind of fun. Absolutely. I do enjoy them as well. That Booker one really, I think, got a lot of good feedback. I think for us, we enjoyed it. I think it came across something I think we're both surprised as far as how well the results were on that. You said you even got one of your listeners hooked on it ever since. So
yeah,
as far as 5starbooking.com, shout out to them. So yeah, I enjoy our conversations going down memory lane as far as it's concerned when we talk about the territories, when we do these other sites. Just plus I also love covering the news as well. In fact, our most recent State of Pro Wrestling, I know at least as far as my channels, was one of our most successful ever coming off of AEW's All In as we are recording this. So continued success, hopefully, to you and your shows. And hopefully we can continue doing these specials and also State of Pro Wrestling. In fact, I had a radio station that emailed me the other day because he just signed up doing or start syndicating my shows to him. And he said, are you guys, can you go ahead and put out the, you know, the wrestling shows, do you syndicate those two? I said, yes, of course I do. Absolutely. Because he was a big one. He went to a recent show for the WWE, big fan. So I'm like, yeah, absolutely. We'll go ahead. And that's also, I integrate that with the regular shows. So absolutely. Indeed. Yeah. Seems like, again, while pro wrestling is not for everyone, there is a hardcore fan base. And I truly, absolutely cannot thank anyone who catches all of our shows, John.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I can't say anything more than what you've said. You have summarized it in probably the best way possible. I want to thank everybody who's listening as well. Through my different outlets as well, the PVD cast and whatnot. I do appreciate it. And just keep on listening and tell some friends, word of mouth, tell some friends that they need to check out the shows.
Absolutely. And I know that there's so many wrestling podcasts out there, but if you give a chance to ours and you like what you hear, truly appreciate you going ahead and let us know. And again, I cannot thank the radio stations enough for playing our shows and absolutely the ones that really call us out as far as really wanting the State of Pro Wrestling indeed. But with that said, let's go ahead and take a trip down memory lane as far as it's concerned. Before Vince McMahon, the evil Vince McMahon, Mr. McMahon, as it were, gobbled up all the territories. I love, first off, before we get into it, the fact that, again, you know, it's kind of revisionist history. Yes, was Vince McMahon a true part of the reason why a lot of basically the territory system died off, and it did die off for quite a bit? Yes. But I don't know. I don't know. What if you were to give a pie chart, and you were to make a pie chart, you had like your you know, board behind you, you're at a presentation room. It's John Orlando here. He's going to present to you his pie chart of exactly the blame game for why the territory system died out. How would you pie chart it out before we get into your thoughts? I won't say who we're going to go ahead and go into, but before we get into your thoughts on those territories.
Okay, I would say that, and I'm going to do the math so I don't like really fudge this up. I'm going to say probably a good 40% of it was Vince McMahon.
Okay, I like that. I like that percentage.
Yeah, I'd say 40%.
It's perceived as more. It's perceived as a lot more, but I think that's a good percentage. I would go 40 or 50 per source.
I'm going to go with 15% other promoters, because everybody acts like Vince was the only one that was predatory, but there, you look in the wrestling annuals and the history of wrestling, There were plenty of other folks that did the same thing. Vern Gagne, as soon as Roy Shire and the San Francisco territory started falling on its rear end and not making as much money, who swooped in? Vern did. All right. You had the war in Atlanta between the Geigels, or excuse me, the Gunkels, not the Geigels, the Gunkels and Gunkel, and that, and they split the territory up, you know, two different ways that way. Again, that was two promoters going head to head, battling each other instead of being unified. So I'm going to say 15% goes to the other promoters. What's your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I would say actually we go 40% Vince, maybe 10% other promoters. Okay. But I would go 50% actually the mismanagement or economic conditions, either which way, of the actually how they were run themselves. I mean, you would look at, okay, as a let's go behind the curtain here and talk about what's going to come up ahead. You're going to talk about Mid-South / UWF, I believe, on this show. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Yes. Part of the reason why, yes, you could say that, okay, some of the talent was obscured, you know, was absconded by Jim Crockett, world-class WWF. Absolutely. But a lot of that also can be attributed, you know, as far as for Bill Watts, he'll also have to, you know, acknowledge, and he has acknowledged, the territory in Oklahoma where he was based and did a lot of his stuff out before they tried that briefly to go national, that area died because of oil related issues to that economy at that point in time. So once that oil, you know, Jim Ross points it out quite a bit as far as that economy, you know, in the mid to late 80s started to really, you know, really just go haywire. And because of that, you know, if something like as far as alternative entertainment such as the UWF Mid-South was affected adversely by that, as far as concerned, that's how they sold off to Jim Crockett Promotions, in my opinion, as far as the downturn of the Oklahoma region as far as economically was led really up to that, as far as concerned, plus the rating of talent from other promotions. So with that said, I think also as well, when you talk about Jim Cornette's, you know, Smoky Mountain Wrestling, when you talk about that, we're not going to talk about Smoky Mountain Wrestling here today. I don't think that's not on our list, but with him, he's admitted it's just like he was always fighting a losing battle by trying to go ahead and getting to towns which were not drawing or getting his show onto new television stations, which was always fighting a losing battle. So in essence, he was always fighting a losing battle, and it was always a numbers game as far as him constantly fighting to stay above water. And finally, he just got enough underwater where he said, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and pay everybody off, and then I'm just done with it. With ECW, you and I both know with ECW, with Paul Heyman, let me borrow from here to kind of pay Paul here to go ahead and you know, talk something good or talk sweet nothings into someone here and to have someone go into bankruptcy over there. So you and I both know how much seriously in debt because of the fact, you know, that they couldn't maintain a national presence, that they couldn't grow a national presence as far as I'm concerned. They didn't keep their national TV show, and they whatever funds were coming in were going out faster than they could bring them in overall. I think the economics of the situation in many of these territories, as we'll talk about today, with some of the groups here, I think has to weigh in that also as well. I really think that, again, while yes, Vince and Jim Crockett Promotions and other, you know, promoters did raid some talent and things of that nature, which obviously does cause a problem, there was also sharing, you know, back in the 80s as well of talent, and it was coordinated. But I also think economic conditions and the fact that the TV market, which was so heavily dominated by the WWE, there wasn't room television-wise on a national level for not very much else.
Yeah, I mean, and I agree with you. I think that you look at economic issues and, you know, also in that 50%, I would also throw in
some of them
that
just outright mismanaged. If you look at it, yeah. Some of them out, like we will talk about one in particular that outright mismanaged it.
So. Yeah. I mean, you look at it from the standpoint of just dollars and cents. If people don't have that external or that extra money to go out and to watch a wrestling show, they're just not going to do it. They, not when they have to pay the rent and the electric bill and the car payment and everything else. And so I definitely agree that UWF, the situation with the oil companies in Oklahoma and Texas was a big concern. You know, you look around, you know, Vern Gagne had his Lake Minnetonka house and like park and whatnot that he had that funded the AWA, and as the state of Minnesota chipped away at that, there goes that. So yeah, it's a combination of things, but I think you and I could both agree that Vince McMahon wasn't as, what's the word we're looking for?
He wasn't the singular reason why the.
There you go. Yes. Died. Yes.
I think he's always given the excuse and has the blame for it. I don't think he is actually entirely 100%. I'm not trying to favor him or be a mark to him or anything like that, using the wrestling lingo on that. For me, it's just living through those times, I could understand why some of these territories actually die out. You could look at it and just say, oh, that's definitely why it died out. And it's not always 100% Vince McMahon's fault.
Correct. Agreed.
So with that said, my friend, once again, it is John Orlando from the PVD cast, along with me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks again for watching, listening. In fact, that would be a great history lesson to go through, you know, just each and every one in detail. You know, they have some channels on YouTube that kind of do it, kind of not do it. They go through it in like 20 or 30 minutes. Some of these actual ones that we're going to talk about today, and you know, a Dark Side of the Ring and whatnot, they need more than an hour to go ahead absolutely on each and every one. But we're going to try and cover what we can as far as it's concerned. But I'm going to give you always, my friend, I'm going to tag you in, and you go ahead and grab the mic away from the interviewer and push him to his side and say, you know what, I'm going to talk about my first territory first.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about a territory that intrigued me. And there's a reason why, because it seemed to be very mysterious. And I'm talking about Portland Wrestling, also known as Pacific Northwest Wrestling. Mm-hmm. I always found it odd because it was one of the promotions I didn't get. And just to recap for people that did not pay attention, the last time that we did a territories episode, I was blessed that living just outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, there was an independent TV station that played a lot of stuff. WWF, NWA, AWA, World Class, IWCCW, UWF. I was blessed with that. That wasn't on cable. That was over the air. So for me, the fact that we didn't get Portland Wrestling for whatever, I kind of just was always wanted to know what was going on. And so whenever I would take a look at an After Mag and there was articles in there about Portland, I was just glued to it because, again, it was something so mysterious. And I wasn't a tape trader. I wasn't smart to that, to be honest. So I'm sure I could have, as a teenager or as a young man, traded some tapes to get it. But I just had to rely on technology eventually somewhere to get it to me. And so now I've watched a lot of PNW via YouTube. And I guess one of the things that I like about it is I didn't realize how many people got their start there. I mean, Roddy Piper, Buddy Rose, but Billy Jack Haynes, Rick Martel, Kurt Hennig, Buzz Sawyer, Matt Bourne, Jesse Ventura, Art Barr. So many of these individuals came through. Scotty the Body, a.k.a. Raven. So many of these folks came through the territory and really made it something special. I think that the other thing that I really enjoyed about it, and I learned about this, you know, when I was older in my fandom, there was a 60th anniversary event in 1985 for Don Owen Promotions. Don Owen was the promoter of Portland Wrestling. And we saw the NWA, the AWA, and the WWF send talent to Portland for this big extravaganza to honor Don Owen. So just that's my first territory that I was going to talk about. I feel like I did forget that, you know, we've talked about as well with this category, this topic, What were some of our hot feuds? And I could say I never saw this. I haven't looked it up yet on YouTube either, but apparently there was a storyline where Matt Bourne was feuding with Playboy Buddy Rose. Buddy married Bourne's sister, and during this feud would make terrible derogatory comments about his sister, and Bourne would get really ticked off about it. So supposedly the story goes that they really didn't like the idea of doing this storyline, but they did it anyways because it drew a lot of money.
And in the end, that's usually what matters as far as
wrestling right.
is concerned. Yes. Doesn't matter if you like it or not. If it draws, then begrudgingly you go ahead and do it. And I'll say with Portland Wrestling, again, Roddy Piper, you mentioned it, had a great affinity for Portland Wrestling. He even went back during his WWE days, WWF days, to go ahead and make appearances at Portland Wrestling from time to time. You could tell that was it. Felt I think he lived in the Pacific Northwest, I believe, with his family and whatnot. So I think that is his home. I think that's where he, you know, I understand, you know, born in Canada, you know, traveled throughout the world, you know, the great story that he always told over the years. But I think Portland, he really found a home that he could always feel comfortable in going back to. And when with Portland Wrestling, though, it was kind of different as far as I'm concerned. It's as far as the names, though, the Billy Jack Haynes, the Matt Bournes, the Buddy Rose you talked about, they were very familiar names in Portland, but not always translating to, you know, great success. I think if any of them, you'd have to say Roddy Piper is the greatest success story coming out of Portland wrestling. And with that, though, said, you know, people within the confines of Portland, it's like Memphis. It was like Memphis in many ways, where they just were tuned to their wrestlers, tuned to their local promotion, and in tune to what was going on as far as the action there. I saw one time a Ric Flair match. I think it was against Buddy Wayne Sawyer, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that too.
It was a 2 out of 3 falls match, and he actually gave Buddy Wayne the second fall. I think he gave him the second fall, if I remember correctly. And just seeing that, you know, obviously was a great lift for Portland at that time, but they never seemed to get beyond that, even though they survived for many years, even into the early 2000s, with noted wrestling journalist Brian Alvarez being a part of what's going on there at that time as well. The Grappler, who never really found success outside of Portland to the extent that he did. I mean, he was a known name across the country, but just, yeah, it just seemed like there were no real breakout stars. You talked about Scotty Levy with Raven. I think he's probably, if you put him as far as the pantheon of wrestlers, maybe you put him number two behind Roddy Piper on that. Maybe you could go Billy Jack Haynes as a number three, but Billy Jack Haynes' run with the WWF and as a national star kind of was shorter, mostly self-induced as far as the reason why. But your thoughts on that, my friend?
Well, I'll say a couple things. Number one, I also know that Buddy Rose, while he was working in other territories, oftentimes on his day off would fly back to Portland as well. Again, showing that there's something there. There's some type of sense of community with that promotion. To have somebody who I think when I read the article, I think that Rose was working in 82. He's working against Backlund in the WWWF, and then he would make trips out to the North Pacific Northwest on his day off.
He was more of a star on his first time around in the WWF, but even after a successful run as an AWA Tag Team Champion. I think a lot of people who have lasting memories of Buddy Rose probably remember him as the enhancement talent on his final run in the WWF.
So I'd say Roddy Piper's number one. I would say I would put Curt Hennig as number two.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, Larry sent him out there, I think, in 81.
You're right. He did dabble a little bit, I believe, in the WWF as well in preliminaries. But I always think of him as AWA really getting his growth right there. But if you want to give Portland his due, then obviously you move him into that list as far as where he got a start from. If you want to go ahead and say that, I won't argue with you on that. I always associate it with AWA as far as really where he started to grow and spread his wings. But if you want to go ahead and go Portland, I'm not going to argue with you. And obviously he would be one of the few great national stars that they actually did end up having.
Yeah, and then I would say Billy Jack Haynes would probably be a third contender.
But his was so short, and obviously his career and his mindset seemed to go two different ways.
That's putting it mildly, yes. Gerald.
Yes, absolutely. Billy Jack Haynes, I see what could have been. Mm-hmm. As opposed to what there was. I know he had times in other promotions, World Class and some other stuff, but it was always, what did he do to self-destruct his potential with any of those organizations? And like you said, he would always go back to Portland as his default. He even tried to run a competing organization at one time in the Portland area. But again, Portland does have its great history. I remember the arena that they had their TV matches from. It's the same arena, just seemingly just for years on end, whether you liked it or you didn't like it, but it had the feel and it had the aroma and it probably had the smell if you went there and actually went there. It just had the feel of a territory. If you want to know what a territory is like, I think one of the best definitions I could show someone if they've never knew what territory was would be the Portland area. I think I would show that individual Portland as far as I can. That or Memphis, I think, as far as it's concerned.
I just learned that sports arena, the Portland sports arena where they did their TV taping, was an old bowling alley.
Yeah.
Well, I never knew that, which probably adds a different aroma to the environment.
Yes, it probably did. And that goes back to the days where, you know, people were smoking and people were just, you know, they didn't have those kind of laws and restrictions on what you could bring in and what you couldn't as far as into arenas. So it is what it is. But it had its charm, from what I'm told, as far as it's concerned. So with that said, Portland does remain a good again, as long as people remember Roddy Piper, people need to and Kurt Hennig, people need to remember Portland wrestling for sure.
Yeah, agreed.
So with that said, it is, of course, John Orlando from the PVD Cast along with me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks again for watching and listening. Truly appreciate it. If you're watching on the PVD Cast or listening on the PVD Cast or me on the Pop Culture Cosmos, I cannot thank you enough for stopping by. We will go, since you did not start with the one I thought you might start off with, I'll go ahead with the alternate version of that here in a little bit. But I'm going to go ahead with I'm going to go ahead with another one, and I'm going to correct myself. Yes. As far as I think, if you could also show Florida championship mm-hmm. wrestling from Florida as a territory, and you would get a good feel what territory wrestling was like. It did have a heavy influence from a lot of Jim Crockett promotions. It was easy because a lot of individuals were based in the Southeast and could easily trek to Florida for many years in the late 70s and the 80s. Run by the Grahams, a very tragic end to the Grahams story as far as that's concerned. I think that's been parlayed with stories and Dark Side of the Rings and all that, as far as I won't go into detail there, but I want to look at the brighter side of championship wrestling from Florida in regards to in its heyday in the 70s and the 80s and the mid 80s and whatnot, and this myriad of stars, because obviously it was led by Dusty Rhodes. You had appearances by Ric Flair constantly. You had burgeoning stars like Rick Rude, Lex Luger, Ron Simmons, you know, those guys came through there, especially Lex Luger and Ron Simmons, as far as, you know, starting for it. Ron Simmons, Florida State, that's where he played football at and, you know, gained All-American status and transferred that ability to the ring. And we all know what happens, after that with their careers with Lex Luger and Ron Simmons. Again, Kevin Sullivan, a great part of the Florida, because he was lived in around the Florida area. And we know that's also start of women, as far as I believe that was her first territory. I could be wrong on that on woman, but I think she did play as, you know, the side by side with Kevin Sullivan, a great part in her burgeoning career there as well. That's where I first caught her presence the most, you know, it was first with Kevin Sullivan in Florida, in Championship Wrestling of Florida, as far as it's concerned. And with that said, though, again, a number of names were there. The Wyndhams and the Rotundas. You cannot say Florida without the Wyndhams and the Rotundas, starting with Blackjack Mulligan, leading to his sons, Barry Wyndham and Kendall Wyndham. And then, of course, Mike Rotunda, who also was a great part of Florida. You know, even though it's Syracuse and all that, the family, the Rotundas and the Wyndhams are based in Florida. And obviously, you know how the intermixing has gone from there and what it led to ultimately as far as Bray Wyatt and other, you know, individuals that have come along ever since. But with that said, my friend, I think that Championship Wrestling of Florida with Gordon Solie on there, I think a lot of people, you know, obviously know the name and his voice and how he was the quintessential wrestling announcer, whether it was Mid-South, Championship Wrestling of Florida, what have you, as far as what was going on in the world of wrestling. I think, again, it provided the next tier after, of course, what was going on with the NWA and WWF and AWA in the late 70s, early 80s. There was that notch below with the world class as well. I think they world class was also teetering itself in between a top shelf and a territory themselves. Then you had someone like, then you had a territory like Championship Wrestling of Florida, which again was had its own niche, but it led to also, you know, Bruiser Brody, Dula the Butcher always stopping by there as well, because that was just a, you know, easy flight for them to go ahead and get into Florida and battle there. The famous Bruiser Brody versus Lex Luger match, where Lex Luger was not sure what Bruiser Brody was going to do and leaped over the cage to get the hell out of there. So with that said, though, the actual feuds that were there as far as, you know, like I said, Kevin Sullivan, Dusty Rhodes, you know, them going at it time and time again. You know, you talk about also bringing in the Outlaw Ron Bass, you talk about other great names that have passed their way through there. I don't think people realize how many great names of the industry of the 70s and 80s passed through there until they actually get a chance to watch.
I agree with you with that. I think that the caliber of talent is sometimes overlooked. But you had, I mean, we forget that you had the Briscoe brothers, our Jerry and Gerald, or Gerald and Jack.
They're based out of Florida. So, they're
based out of Florida. You had Terry and Dory Funk, who are based out of Amarillo, but made Florida kind of their second home. You mentioned Woman, and yes, Woman definitely was still finding her own self, but yet was incredibly, I mean, everything, the total package. She was beautiful. She was sexy. She had this air, this aura of danger surrounding her. And I mean, Kevin Sullivan and his satanic crew. I mean, that was another great storyline that as a kid kind of captivated me. Again, this is another territory that unfortunately I didn't get on TV. So I had to rely a lot on the aftermags, which it seemed like Florida was always in the aftermags. That there wasn't an issue that went by that there wasn't at least something in there about Eddie Graham's promotion. I guess I know we want to stay on the positive side, but I just, Jared, want to get your opinion. Do you think that Eddie Graham's death maybe started or just made things go a little bit faster in terms of the demise of the promotion?
Oh, I think that things were heading down already as far as it's concerned, because like I said, the talent started, it's a theme. The talent started to not being as replenished. The big stars of the 70s and 80s didn't go there quite as frequently in 86, 87, and 88 and whatnot. So with that said, you know, obviously when Eddie Graham died by suicide, it kind of changed things as far as that's concerned. Like you said, I don't know why, you know, you would have to go into real detail why Eddie Graham, you chose that route to go ahead and you know, kill himself on that. But obviously it created, like with the world class, with the Von Erichs and their passings, it just left this mark on the promotion that it was going to be really hard to sustain. And while, like I said, after 1985, they were able to run some consistency. They did bring in Ron Simmons. They did have Lex Luger for a period of time there, but those guys left And after those guys left, it just was really hard for them to go ahead and stay afloat because, you know, Jim Crockett, World Championship Wrestling, decided to go ahead and get a lot of them who they weren't getting. WWF, WWF was getting them as well, but they just weren't able to sustain that homegrown talent, because in Florida, you talk about Florida, Florida is one of the most prosperous states for wrestling talent anywhere in the nation, that they kept on producing great stars after great stars after great stars. But I could just see that in the late 80s, it was just, they were coming less and less as far as it concerned. Scott Hall, before he went through AEWA and whatnot, he had a turn there as far as in Florida as well. So with that said, though, the death of Eddie Graham in 1985, I think cast a shadow over how solid, you know, Championship Wrestling Florida was at that point in time. Maybe that was a bigger sign that you know, the worst was yet to come, and ultimately it did.
Well, I think that plus, you know, I mean, it's very well known that Dusty Rhodes took the book in Charlotte and took a lot of people from Florida with him, folks that he had worked with. And so that also crippled a little bit of the roster. And, you know, I think we're overlooking a big, big individual that I don't remember his actual title, but we had an early Great Muta show up. Yes. And was he the White Ninja or the...
Yeah, he was the White Ninja there. And then he was also, I believe, the Super Ninja in World Class.
Yes. Think,
like you said, Florida first, World Class second, and then he went to WCW. So if memory serves. But like you said, with Eddie Graham, you know, there was a lot going on in his life at the time of his passing, and the business changing and the business being dominated by the WWE and World Championship Wrestling, NWA, was maybe leading into those factors as well, among other things, which caused it. But yeah, once he passed, it seemed like, you know, like with World Class, it just seemed like once the, you know, some of the Von Erichs started passing off, it just seemed like it was a matter of time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it goes to show that it's not always sometimes the economic aspect of things, like we mentioned before with UWF in the AWA, that sometimes just, I mean, plus, let's be honest real quick. Everybody talks about it, and I believe it, that Eddie Graham was the smartest man in wrestling. He was very good at finishes and coming up with angles and storylines. And so, I mean, in a way, his death, you're also robbing the promotion of those
creativity.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
And absolutely.
And who knows, maybe had he stuck around, maybe Florida still would have been a powerhouse up till the 90s or the 91 or 92. Mm-hmm. You know, I think anybody that says, well, the such and such promotion would have caved to Vince. They were all going to cave to Vince. I mean, they were. As Vince got that machine rolling and has the merchandising and has the pop culture crossover and everything else, I think, Gerald, that it was inevitable that he was going to win.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, with Championship Wrestling of Florida, it first folded when it sold and got bought into by World Championship Wrestling, or Jim Crockett Promotions, when they bought into it in 1987. The Mike Graham tried to revive it again. Like I think in 89 as well, but that was short-lived. And Mike Graham, unfortunately, also had a very sad ending to his life later on, about a little over a decade later after that. But yeah, Championship Wrestling of Florida, some great memories as far as action is concerned. Let's get back to some final thoughts on Championship Wrestling of Florida, because again, the action as far as the match of seeing the stars, and when you look how loaded a roster that they had, or just people coming in for one shots or what have you, I mean, the list is really outstanding. I mean, you can go to Wikipedia at the number of different wrestlers that were there over the course of the years, and it's like a who's who of wrestling. I mean, everyone from, like I talked about with Rhodes, Flair, you go Luthez, Kaniski, you know, there's some great names there. The Ortons, as far as is concerned, you know, again, like I talk about the Wyndhams, the Rotundas, you have the Freebirds that stop by there. You know, just so many great names. A One Man Gang had a you know term there as well. Also as well, Jimmy Garvin. You know, he's Florida based. Oh, yeah. He stopped by, and people underestimate his success in his career. I think that Jimmy Garvin had a really good career personally. But with that said, though, a lot of great names passed through there. Lex Luger, Ron Simmons, once again, to go ahead and really solidify Florida Championship Wrestling as a proving ground for many. I if you get me, John, on this, and I know you talked very well, and both we tried to talk very well about Portland, I would say Florida produced more stars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Than Portland. Not just the guys who stopped by, but the guys that were homegrown in Florida as well.
Absolutely. I would agree with you 110%. I mean, just from Luger, Simmons, and Muda, just those three alone, I think that they outshine Piper, Henning, and Haynes.
That's not to mention the Wyndhams, the Rotundas. Yep. Yeah, it just goes on and on and on. But again, Florida Championship Wrestling, I also think, as far as it's concerned, you know, there has to be a thought with Portland and Florida and all these small territories to talk about, as far as what if they would have maybe approached it in this fashion with the talent that they had, or this fashion. You kind of go back in time, you play armchair quarterback, because it leads us back into our pie chart as far as exactly who is responsible for what and why it went wrong.
Yeah, and I also feel like a lot of promotions still weren't looking at other talent in other smaller promotions, you know, mud show promotions, as Jim Cornette would say, like the indies. I think at that time that there was still some very talented people in the indies. But I think during this time that there was a little bit of, well, we know that there's a little bit of gatekeeping going on in the world of professional wrestling. So, but you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, you know, this is how history is going to remember all these territories, by what could have been.
What could have been indeed. But once again, it is John Orlando. What could it be now with John Orlando at the PVD cast, along with me, Gerald Glassford? Thanks again for watching, listening. Pop Culture Cosmos. Also as well, go ahead and make sure you check out John's show, Matt Talk, on a weekly basis as well. With that said, I do want to go ahead into your next choice as we go down. And this is a very familiar one. I almost hear Jim Ross kind of in the back of my head as we talk about this coming up.
Well, the next one that I selected was Mid-South Wrestling, a.k.a. the Universal Wrestling Federation. Now, this is a promotion that I did receive on my TV back when I was a kid. This was one of the, I think it was on Thursday nights, either at 10 or 11 p.m. So if I wasn't able to watch it, I was recording it, because I really liked it because, again, much like World Class, and I said that on our last installment on the territories, much like World Class, UWF was chaotic. It was surprising. It had a lot of action. And a lot of that action was hard hitting. And I liked it and I loved it because, again, as a kid, it was exciting. It wasn't very dull and boring like WWE Wrestling Challenge was, where, as again, you're going to have a individual, you know, Jim Evans take on Hercules Hernandez. Like, that's not a match in my mind, even as a kid. I was like, I don't want to see that. I want to see Hercules Hernandez take on Hacksaw Jim Duggan on Mid-South Wrestling. You know, you talk about the stars. Man, there's so many, you know, from the Junkyard Dog, Dr. Death Steve Williams, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Ted DiBiase, Missy Hyatt, Eddie Gilbert, Sting and Rick Steiner got their start there. So did the Ultimate Warrior as part of the Blade Runners tag team. Coco Beware. The list goes on and on. I feel like...
Sting and the Warrior got their start officially in Memphis, but they really kind of just... They actually started really wrestling in UWF as far as it's concerned. I don't think there's much of what you could call wrestling from what their appearances were in Memphis. So I'm going to give it to you on that one.
Okay. In fact, I forget even what their names were. They had really bad.
The Freedom Fighters. I think the Freedom Fighters.
Yeah, that was their team name, but I forget what their actual names were. But that's neither here nor there. But Yeah, I mean, but look, you know, that's a lot of talent. And Ernie the Cat Ladd, Bill Watts getting back in the ring every once in a while also was a huge deal.
The Freebirds, Terry Taylor.
The Freebirds, Terry Taylor, Devastation Incorporated.
One of the most underrated feuds of the 90s, Terry Taylor and Chris Adams. And I think that if they had, you know, just stayed, if Chris Adams had stayed on the straight and narrow and Terry Taylor had avoided the WWF and the Red Rooster, they would have just been able to parlay that into something we saw out of Bruiser Brody and Abdullah the Butcher going, you know, on promotion to promotion worldwide, because the UWF started that great, great feud between those two.
Yeah, and in fact, one of the matches, the Battle of New Orleans, was something that I saw, again, years before I knew anything about the Tupelo concession stand brawl. But for me, this was super exciting that these four guys, Adams, Sting, Eddie Gilbert, and Terry Taylor, were just beating the daylights out of each other all in the arena, clear into the back of the arena. That was so exciting for me as a kid, and that's on my list of favorite matches of all time. And I agree with you. I think that that was certainly a monumental feud, maybe only outdone by the JYD and Fabulous Freebirds feud that went on there in the territory.
Well, I want to ask you this when it comes to what if. UWF, before they sold to Crockett, and we talked about earlier in the show about the devastating, you know, because their main market, their main hub, their main market base was in Oklahoma, you know, northeast part of Texas, you know, Oklahoma, that part of deal. And obviously we talked about the financial circumstances really causing a downturn for the company as well. But they tried to go national. They tried to do stuff in Chicago, L.A., briefly before they were bought out by Jim Crockett Promotions. Of all the companies that we talked about or will talk about in the coming days, or you know, when we go ahead and hopefully be able to do this again with territories, are they the promotion from a standpoint that, man, I think of any of the promotions that were out there that could give you a package of exciting presentation, a quality roster, and some interesting faces, interesting figures, interesting personalities, do you think that's the one that's the man, the wish that would have happened, wish that would have popped, wish that would have been able to get a chance to go national and find some success?
Yes, absolutely. 110% on that one. I think if they had the potential in capital letters, but between the economic issues that's happening, and then, you know, I'm not that big of a believer in, hey, we're really successful in Oklahoma and Louisiana and some of Mississippi, so let's go try Chicago. That's a whole other world, man. That's a whole other world that doesn't understand your style of wrestling. Maybe. I shouldn't say that for certain in Chicago, but you're creating a whole, you're starting from scratch in another big city where, okay, you're successful. Maybe if you just go to Eastern Texas, maybe you could expand there. All right. Maybe you could expand if you're looking at other places, like maybe you can expand. And I know that there was other territories in that area, but maybe you could go to the Panhandle of Florida and expand that way. I feel like everybody wanted to go to these major metropolitan cities, and it never seems to work out because of budgets and because of travel and all that jazz.
I would just say this, if they had only gotten a chance, yeah, I know they had a national syndication. I saw them in Southern California as far as their shows are concerned. But if they actually got a platform with that show, with that presentation, yes, I understand it was probably the darkest arena. It's like going into a black hole if you watch it on television. It's like... You know, if you fought outside the ring, you would just see two wrestlers being sucked up into the vortex. But all kidding aside, if there was any way, I mean, Watts, forever you say, man, did such a horrible job in WCW. He was very creative as far as his booking in UWF Mid-South. And with that said, I think that's the biggest regret. You know, even the AWA did not present to you as good of a package as what the UWF offered, but the problem is they never got the big enough platform to go ahead and showcase what they had. by that time, they were starting to fall apart financially. They were starting to fall apart as far as the roster with you know, WWE and WCW picking off their things. Again, goes back to that. I think the 40% from Vince McMahon holds true, but financial concerns. But, man, if there was any presentation I would show as far as an hour is concerned from territory wrestling that wasn't WCW or WWE related, I think I would say from a presentation standpoint, sorry, World Class. Sorry, AWA. I would say it's the UWF.
Agreed. And I don't know. Yes, it is a dark arena, but that, to me, I think you can work that into the feel of the promotion, you know? And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing to have.
No, I didn't say it's a bad thing, but it was kind of funny how dark it was. Just like literally right outside the ring, you would just get sucked up into the vortex, and it was kind of fun. That's all. I just, especially if you had black and white TVs, or if you know your color TVs during that first, you know, area of time right there in the mid 80s. Yeah, it was dark. The blacks really presented itself out, but I'm just kidding about that.
Well, I would say this, that if they had the opportunity, UWF, to be on a bigger stage, they needed to stick with Jim Ross and Michael Hayes as the commentary team. Joel Watts is terrible as a commentator. I'm just going to throw that out there.
All right. Well, with that said, I will go ahead and...
I know what's coming up, ladies and gentlemen. That's why I keep laughing. So
okay, well, it is. We went from the Mid-South / UWF to the UWF that did have a national channel. That was on a smaller sports channel, but it was a national TV deal. They did also liken themselves as far as the UWF is concerned. That's the Universal Wrestling Federation with Herb Abrams at the helm. That was a major player for all of 5 minutes, but also carried itself out through what, about a year, 2 years, where it really had some play. But the grandiose design of somebody that thinks they have money to put into this, but you know, we talk and kid about Tony Khan as far as AEW and all that. And I will say this again, Herb Abrams, he is a one-of-kind character. He fits right in with the pro wrestling landscape because of what he did both in and out of the ring. And the dark side of the ring, while it romanticizes quite a bit of his life inside and outside the ring, the fact that he was able to attain some type of success early on with the UWF, the myriad of wrestlers that would stop by for a big paycheck, whether it's Cactus Jack, Steve Williams, Sid Vicious, you know, as far as it's concerned, he just wasn't able to sustain it. Although they had like some grandiose ideas as far as I think Universal Studios, they did it one time. They had a pay-per-view, I think, also listed here in Las Vegas. You know, they were trying to become the next national company. And again, there's so many, this is what you've seen over the years, John, as well, with the classic tale of a guy who thinks he has a little bit of money, thinks it's going to work for him, think he can go ahead and get on some type of national type of, even if it's low bar, low viewage, national television, and try to parlay that into a national company, thinking he's going to be the next WWE to go ahead and beat Vince McMahon. And you got to give Herb Abrams credit for trying to think high with his aspirations, but his follow through is probably some of the most disastrous we've ever seen.
Yeah, I think, look, I give Herb Abrams credit for having some moxie. You know, he certainly had the attitude and the vision for what he wanted to do, just the execution maybe just wasn't all there. You know what? This was the UWF. My cousin was in the Air Force, ended up going out to California for a couple of years, and he would send back tapes that he would make for his brother, my other cousin, and I. So when they would come in the mail, that was like a big deal for us, because we're like, oh my gosh, because we were getting USWA. He was getting that in California. He was getting UWF, Herb Abrams. I forget what, I think he was getting, what was the other one that he was getting? A California.
They did Reseda. They worked Reseda as well. The UWF in Reseda, okay. California. They worked out of a bar/club there, I believe, as well. A lot of TV tapings. In fact, I remember that one of David Sammartino's best matches ever was with Cactus Jack when he was at Cactus Jack was a freelancer, and they had one of the best matches David Sammartino ever had with Bruno Sammartino as the color commentator on that. So yeah, I thought that was something I'd throw a note there as well.
Yeah, and you know, they didn't have too many homegrown people. They had Steve Ray, or was he Stevie Ray? I think he was Steve Ray. Mm-hmm. Wild Thing. Sandy Beach.
It wasn't the Stevie Ray that you and I know for. It was a other Stevie Ray, as far as it's concerned. Yeah. Not exactly the Stevie Ray that we know from Houston, along with Booker and making up Harlem Heat. But then he had Sandy Beach. When Sandy Beach is your continual top choice as a guy that you want to push, I think that says it all.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think if they had – well, of course, they had Davey Meltzer too. Who could forget him? Yes. If that wasn't the most carny bit of
well, you got him at Randy Hogan, who jobbed everywhere. It was always a fun time to see as far as I'm concerned because he had that look. But yes, I get what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, so what overall, I got to say that I remember not being incredibly bored with UWF, like as a kid watching it, like it kept my interest a little bit. So I got to give it a little bit of credit there. You know, didn't he also bring Andre the Giant in for one time?
Yes, he did. He did. Okay. At the latter stages and very injured part of his life, I believe he did pay for it out as well. He was the type of guy, again, that was willing to do anything and everything as long as he had a line of cocaine in front of him.
And I think that's it. That's, we can just close up shop. I don't know. I don't know what more to say.
I mean, just the aspiration, and I'm sorry to use that, because I do host Lakers shows and we talk about the NBA and Kawhi going on, and aspiration obviously is, but he did aspire to do some great things, and he had some like really out of the box ideas. And if it had just been centralized and so he would have had someone there by his side, maybe just, okay, that's a great idea, but let's work our way to that. Let's get to that point. Let's stabilize our direction first. I think that it could have lasted a lot longer. I'm not saying it would have been the next great national promotion, but I do think that the UWF, Herb Abrams UWF, would have survived longer because it does have its charm. For whatever you want to say, it has its charm. It was on the sports channel, I believe, as far as it's concerned, that was seen and, you know, could be seen in most areas, but really, you know, when you're running late at night, who really watches it? But again, the dreams of Herb Abram never really matched the reality of Herb Abram's UWF.
Yeah, I mean, definitely he was trying something new. I think what you mentioned is kind of what we mentioned with Tony Khan, is that Tony's got these great ideas. So did Herb, but there's nobody there to reel them in and go, listen, that's great, and we should definitely work with this. But let's do it a different way. I think that sums it up, that Herb just didn't have anybody there to tell him no, essentially. And so when you have that happening, you know, things are going to go sideways.
So with that said, my friend, it is, of course, the man, the myth, the legend himself, my tag team partner, John Orlando from the PVD Cast and Matt Talk. It is me, Gerald Glassford. From the Pop Culture Cosmos, I want to thank you so much for watching and listening. But before we head on out, John, I know that you're going to be running this right away. So with that said, what have you got planned for people out there in the coming days and weeks on the PVD Cast? And also as well, well, it'll be past tense when I run it, most likely. So they'll be able to catch it already on the docket for you at pvdcast.com.
That's right. This episode is going to go out here in a few hours because I really wanted to get it out there. And I'm truthful, too. It's one of the things that maybe some people don't understand. When you are a podcaster, getting guests can sometimes be a pain in the neck. You know, and Gerald knows he's kind of in that same situation that I am in. So I'm running this within the next couple of hours. Let some folks know about it. I got some great interviews coming up in the next week or two with a couple of comic book creators who are celebrating their graphic novel of their long-running comic that they have been working on for a long time. In fact, they're going to be on tour. They're coming to Columbus, Ohio. That's coming with Greg and Fake are the two creators. And, still got some other items in the works that I'm still waiting to hear back from. But, check it out. If you like what you heard here, go back to pvdcast.com, go back through the archives. There's plenty of episodes. There's 540 some odd episodes. So there's probably some there that you will definitely enjoy.
Absolutely, indeed. It is the PVD Cast at pvdcast.com and through many and all audio podcast outlets. Go ahead and check it out today. Plus also as well, go ahead and check out his great show devoted to Matlock. No, not Matt's, not on the mat. Matt Locke. It is Matt Talk, indeed. What's going on with that show?
We're getting ready to record another episode here within the next couple of days for this Sunday coming up. Unfortunately, my partner has been out of town. He's been working the convention circuit and had a couple conventions out of town. So he was here for just a couple of days. So that's why we're a little bit behind getting the next episode up. But we are in season 8 of Matlock, and we are just about a season and a half away from wrapping it up. But we basically every week we take a view of the next episode in the chronology. We talk about it, we analyze it, we even poke fun at it, and we've actually been doing a few other things too. We've been highlighting a couple of other items, like for an example, No Time for Sergeants, which is a movie, a comedy that Andy Griffith made right before the Andy Griffith Show. So we're kind of branching out and hitting some of that as well. But Matt Talk can be found wherever you find great podcasts. And you can check out the Facebook page over at Matt Talk Podcast.
There you go, indeed. Once again, it is John Orlando. Before we head on out, John, we got about a minute and a half left. Wanted to go ahead and ask you real quick, what should our next State of Pro Wrestling special look like? You have any thoughts formulating in that evil heel like brain of yours?
Well, I think we could still do another third episode of the territories, because there's plenty of territories we haven't talked about.
This is true, but they always never meet a happy ending. That's the problem.
you're absolutely right. I say that, I mean, you know, I'm trying to think of other things. Maybe we could do something with wrestling movies.
Oh, interesting. I will definitely go ahead and ponder that with you, my friend. But yes, okay. Back to the territories. Wrestling, entertainment, booking sheets, doesn't matter. We do it all right here for you at the State of Pro Wrestling. Plus, once a month, we come at you with the latest news and information on the world of the pro wrestling industry for you. And there's no one that covers it better than John Orlando from the PVD Cast and me, Gerald Glassford, right here from Pop Culture Cosmos. Thanks so much again for joining us. It is John Orlando, along with me, Gerald Glassford. We'll be back, hopefully, at the end of this month, talking the best in pro wrestling right here on the State of Pro Wrestling from the PVD Cast and the Pop Culture Cosmos. Ding, ding, ding!
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Gerald Glassford and yours truly talking about some more wrestling territories. And I hope that you enjoyed this episode, because we certainly enjoyed making it. And maybe you want to let me know that. And maybe you have some questions about this episode, or any episode for that matter, of the PVD Cast. And you want to know how to get in touch with me. Well, let me tell you how you can do that. First off, you can shoot me an email if you like. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is the email address. You can drop me a line over on Facebook, Threads, and Instagram. Just look for the handle of @PVDcast. And you can still find me on Twitter under my personal Twitter handle of @PVDMVP. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know about the show and where they can hear it. Well, there's a couple different avenues for that. First off, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly, and probably the best place to get every single new episode of the show. But it's also available through all those major podcasting outlets and apps. All you have to do is go to your favorite outlet or app, go to the search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And while we're talking about those outlets and apps, if you happen to be listening through one of them, how about rating and reviewing? Rating and reviewing will help me out in the algorithm, and it lets people know that you are listening to the PVDcast. So it's super important for me. Don't forget to also subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. Now that's two ways to listen. Here's the third and final way to listen. Every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I do a live broadcast through the Facebook page. So there you go. There's three easy ways to hear the show. PVDcast.com, through your favorite podcasting outlet or app, and of course, through the Facebook page on Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you once again for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2026.